Hello, everybody. This is Tim Shum, Fireside Chicago. Thank you so much for listening and in support of our show that we put together. This show is a brainchild that came out of the coronavirus pandemic. The show was started in April of 2020, first as a live webinar where we recorded all the shows and later turned it into a podcast. Now we do a weekly podcast where we host fireside chats with prominent leaders in Chicago's business community. If you haven't heard of 1871, you probably aren't around the Chicago tech ecosystem, and that's okay. And we go into the history of 1871 in this show, where 1871 is today and where 1871 is going. My guest today is Betsy Ziegler, the current CEO over the last 3 years of 1871. And we get into today some of the recent mergers and acquisitions that 1871 has done, be it ITA and Catapult in Chicago, if you've heard of those, or familiar, if you're a member. We get into why, who, what, when, where, and how. We get into diversity and inclusion in Chicago and Chicago's tech ecosystem. And we get into where the city of Chicago is going, the gaps, and things that we're doing well. So hopefully you enjoy the interview today with Betsy. And thanks again for joining the show.
Betsy, nice seeing you again. Thank you so much for carving out the time in your busy schedule. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, my pleasure, Tim. Great to see you too. Happy Wednesday.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we got a lot going on in the world. We got a lot going on in the tech scene here in Chicago, and 1871 has a lot going on, which I'm excited to kind of get into. I'd be shocked if some of the listeners that follow us are not familiar with 1871 or haven't seen you show up in various avenues of the tech ecosystem. But for the folks that haven't, let's assume that maybe there's a few that haven't. Could you give us a little background on yourself and 1871 as an organization?
Sure. So I'll start with 1871. 1871 is often referred to as Chicago's central tech address. We're located in the Merchandise Mart. We were named the number one private incubator in the world in 2019. That sort of the year of 2020 kind of has evaporated from my memory. So I have to like do the calendar check. Yes, 2019. What most people think about 1871 is the place for early stage companies, the person who's got an idea and trying to figure out that idea can become a business. The truth about 1871, however, is that we support companies across the full maturity curve. So we do have, of course, that person who has an idea that wants to see if that can become a business. But we also have the Series B, Series C high growth company, and we also have the corporate. So I like to say we have from idea to Fortune 50, my team is organized to support. And of course, depending on where you are along that curve, what you need looks and feels really different. And so the jobs to be done are really different along that curve. And my mighty team of 32 is organized to deliver and meet people because they're continuing to grow, right? Like, so we have to continue to kind of grow with them. We've got about 400 early stage companies being built at 1871 right now. When I say at, I mean mostly in a virtual setting, but 300 growth stage companies and several dozen corporates. And one of the things that we're a nonprofit, and one of the things we think hard about is job creation. And are we actually, is the mix of people representative of Chicago? So in terms of job creation, at last count, there are about 11,000 jobs created by 1871 early stage companies. And I know this is not apples to apples, and somebody in your listening audience will be like, it's not factually correct, but I'm going to say it anyway. When you think about 11,000 jobs, and let's just assume it's an average salary of 70 grand a year. I don't know if that's right, but let's just assume that for a second. That's close to $800 million of annual salary impact. And, you know, in the Chicagoland area. And then when you think of McDonald's or other big companies moving from the suburbs to the city, they've brought maybe 2,000 jobs with them. Now, that's great. They brought 2,000, and that's in one year. And we have 11,000 in 8 years. So again, I get not apples to apples, but it's core from an economic development perspective. And then tied to that, just one more thought, and I'll give you a couple of sentences about myself. The themes around diversity are really important. And does the makeup of 1871 kind of mirror the distribution of people in Chicago, age, race, gender? And I would give ourselves a very strong grade for our progress. We're not necessarily at the place we want to be. So we're about 30% female on the early stage side, founder side. We're about 20% Black founded and about just shy of 15% Latinx. And all those are metrics that we talk about in our weekly OKRs and that we're constantly focused on to get to something that looks a little bit better. But I'm proud of my team for the progress that they've made. Very quickly on myself, I've been the CEO for 3 years. Been in Chicago since 1998, spent 7 years at Northwestern University before coming to 1871 and a dozen years before that as a consultant where I was at McKinsey as an insurance practice partner. And so when you think about a decade ago, I was an insurance practice partner and now I'm the CEO of this amazing innovation hub. A friend of mine gave me a little trinket for my desk that said, I'm way cooler on the internet. So at least on paper, I'm certainly cooler than I was a decade ago, but it's perhaps more information than you needed, but the synopsis of me and where 1871, the organization is as of right now.
It's been so awesome to see the tech ecosystem grow and mature and establish itself and, you know, provide support. And I think sometimes it gets lost in the shuffle of everything, exits and raising money and all this kind of stuff. Like Chicago needs jobs. We need to focus on what industry those jobs are coming from and be forward thinking. I don't think the textile industry is coming back anytime soon. Like right, the future right. is technology. Yep. And we need an ecosystem to support that. And I love yep. that stat around here's how many jobs were created and the salary impact. Because you're right, that goes to the services companies that support those companies, that goes to the sure. restaurants, that goes to the local real estate, that feeds into everything else, taxes, of course, yep. and it feeds into everything else. So I just love that. And you're at the forefront of that.
And I think on that point, the circulation of dollars, particularly in neighborhoods around Chicago that may not have the same level of job growth, you know, the circulation impact of a dollar invested in certain zip codes is much higher than in others. And so how do we continue to get people that might have been considered under-resourced before in the position where they can start a business, grow it, employ people, build some wealth, you know, the impact on their neighbors, on their, to your earlier points, like it's exponential.
Opportunities feeds in, yeah, to the neighbors, to the children. It's a generational effect that happens when you look at cities over the long haul. Let's talk about the diversity and inclusion aspect. I mean, sure. like clearly 2020 shed a spotlight into some gaps in all aspects of the United States, Chicago, elsewhere, business. And the tech ecosystem has historically been, and there's been a lot of stuff around this, like pretty homogenous and yep. around male, female, people of color. Talk about that a little bit and your lens on that, and then what you're doing at 1871 to maybe impact some of those areas that you mentioned.
Yeah, sure. So I'd encourage us to think about this as both the early stage founder as well as the tech leader in a company, because they're both important. Chicago actually does pretty well relative to the national average in support of who most people, the categorization of under-resourced founders. Women, Black, Latinx are the predominant buckets. You mentioned this thought about jobs and how Chicago needs jobs. That's even more important now with the impact of COVID and the increasing bankruptcies and obviously, and the K-shaped recovery where there's a whole bunch of people, you know, on the top part of the K that are basically back to normal and the other part of the K that are not and don't really have a pathway to do that. If you take that as a concept and you think about job creation over time and you look at the last three decades, the 40 million net new jobs created over the last three decades, 100% of them came from startups. And so for me, when you think about Chicago's economic recovery, the fastest way to get to recovery is to get more people starting businesses. And we believe that entrepreneurial talent and aspiration is equally distributed, but opportunity and access is not. That's not a novel thought. It's not a Betsy quote. It's a Betsy. I took it from somebody else, right? So I don't get credit for that quote, but so what does that mean for organizations like 1871? and others like ours, Matter, MHub, et cetera. We can do a ton with respect to education and connection and helping those people figure out if their idea can be something, or if they're, or if the thing they launched has the opportunity to scale or grow faster. We can surround people with community that are in, that are vested in their interest. I think the opportunity that we really have is on the capital front. And we, you know, Tim, as well as I do, that the distribution of venture dollars is, it's like 2.2% went to women. If you're a Black woman, it was like 0.006 or 0.0006. It's just ridiculous. You know, there are 15 women in the history of venture that have ever had an exit of $1 billion or more. One of them was just Christy Ross, just joined that crowd a couple of weeks ago from Tasty.
Shout out Christy Ross, that's right.
So it's a massive problem. And the problem really, it, for me, the focus area has to be at the start. So when you look at the average white founder, they start with about $18,000 in their pocket. That's not friends and family around. That's literally, they have access to about $18,000 on average. The average Black founder has access to $500. So that gap, I think it's 37 times. We can do the math later, but I think it's 37 times gap completely changes your confidence level, your willingness to take a risk, you're willing to do those things. And so 1871 is focused really a lot on this problem. We've got programs. The Black Tech just started as a program for Black early stage founders. We've got WISDOM for female founders, and we've got Latinx that we do in partnership with the Illinois Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Just very quickly on the other side, the for tech leaders, there's also significant opportunity to do more to build the pipeline of diverse talent into technical roles, as well as make sure that they have the opportunities to succeed inside of those roles. So we have one program. We actually inherited it from the Illinois Technology Association deal, which we'll talk about, I think, in a few minutes, called WIC, the WIC Accelerator, the Women Influence Chicago Accelerator. It's phenomenal. We've had 60 graduates of it. The next round starts at the end of March. We have two cohorts starting, one that's technical facing and one that's market facing. But it's, it has a group of 20 women who are somewhere between 3 and 8 years of experience, who are getting that extra level of training, like deep mentorship, and in a cohort of people who will be connected to them, hopefully for the rest of their professional careers. And so I could wax on for a long time about opportunity and things we're doing, but those are just a handful of points that I guess I'd like to share.
A lot of the listeners know I run a recruiting firm, and I've been in this space my entire career. In 2020, the diversity and inclusion spotlight was 100x what it was before to companies. Yeah. And a lot of the companies' answer, big, medium, small, was, oh, we need to open up the Canada pools. Hey, Tim and your team, can you help us source? And I think that's like a, it's like a, not even a great short-term solution to a longer term problem. And I think you're kind of speaking to, like, okay, when you really put yourself in the shoes of someone that's talented, that has an idea, what are their obstacles? How do they grow up? What are the resources around them? And, you know, a lot of the tech jobs are software engineers, software developers, and data type roles. Yep. And I think it starts even before they even get into high school, right? Like, do folks have access to awareness, A, programs, B, role models?
Yep.
So, hey, you know, it's like, it's all these different things that I think, you know, if we can continue to make some progress as a city and with the support of, obviously, of 1871 and everything that you're doing, I think we're onto something. But I think, like, the knee-jerk reaction of, like, oh, hey, we need to diversify our employee pool today.
It's the innovation. I don't mean to suggest that it's theater, but we see also a lot of companies that are like, well, we need to do a meeting at 1871. This is pre-COVID. We need to do XYZ, but which feels very much like, well, we went to 1871 for a day. So we're on the path to have an innovation strategy, maybe, but probably not, right? So we banned all things that felt like an entrepreneurial petting zoo where people are coming in and just disrupting the lives of the people that are building and kind of. And I think on your point on the recruiting front is similar. Well, I've diversified my slates, so you know I've done what I can.
Yeah, we're good. Yeah, you know, right.
We're good. Yeah. And we have to change the system, right? You're at the heart of it on the talent front, but systemic change is required to actually end up with an outcome that any of us are looking forward to. And that's hard and takes time. I mean, after the death of George Floyd, we all saw every company you could imagine rush to make a statement. And in most of those, they said, we'll have a conversation. And I don't know how many had a conversation. We did. I don't know how many did. But and then so many rushed to like say, this is the plan. This is the plan that we're going to do. And I took three and a half months before we shared our plan. Now, the plan was co-created with a group of Black founders at 1871, the plan for early stage founders. Because I don't know, I am not a Black founder. I don't know what the unique circumstances are that we have to solve for. And it's the same on the recruiting front, right? Like how do you enroll the right people in the discussion so you actually build a plan that has the opportunity to actually have an impact?
Switching gears a little bit, just the support that 1871 brings. I was a mentor at 1871 for 2 years. I was waiting out a 2.5 year non-compete. I have a background in sales and sales leadership. I was providing, I guess, sales mentorship to some of the companies there once a month. I had a great time doing it. You walk into 1871 and there's just a buzz of energy. People are excited about their ideas. They're making things happen. It's very collaborative. And I looked at this as like, okay, if I'm starting a tech company, and maybe I don't have access to, hey, my dad started one and sold it and IPO'd or something like that. I don't have access to something like that. Building a business is extremely hard. There's a billion different variables that could all go wrong in any different sense. And I just sensed that you had venture capital in the building. You had secondary like education. You had universities in the building. Yep. You had mentors. You had all these different programs and speaking engagements to really kind of like demystify what entrepreneurship is and get people there, not necessarily quicker, but more supported along the way to increase that probability of success.
Yeah.
Is that a good way to categorize it for the listeners and maybe the aspiring founder?
I think there are two or three pieces that I'd amplify. The first is my job, my team's job is to increase the probability of success of everybody that we're working with and to shorten the time frame from the reach to that success. So to your point, because of the nature of the environment we have and the density and diversity of the network of people who are engaged, can we help you shortcut some things or help you prevent making mistake A? Because we know that, you know, 60% of people intuitively think A is the right path and we know that it's not. So we can help you with that. So I completely agree. I think the second point is what's under the roof. And we think of 1871 as an experience as much as we do a place. In fact, and obviously in this last year, it's all been about it being an experience. It's been virtual. But I think we're still the only organization of its kind in North America, nonprofit that has under the same roof, venture capital firms that are headquartered there, university partners that are not headquartered, but that are very committed, corporate innovation labs, and then this whole community of growth stage and early stage companies. And then not to mention the mentors and the workshop leaders and everybody else that kind of layer in on the outside, and then all the people that come for public events. And so it is that if you were to go today, you wouldn't necessarily say that the energy is the same, but that's temporary because of the world we're living in. But I have full expectation that vibrancy will be back as soon as the vaccines have made it through, you know, a chunk of the Chicago population.
I'm 1,000,000% advocate for mentorship and advice. You know, like I'm 2.5 years into my business. I had several conversations that steered me away from a 1 year mistake or a $10,000 mistake that was so impactful and increased my probability to get through the pandemic and kind of otherwise. Yeah, and I just feel like, you know, there's, yeah, there, you can't have ego getting into entrepreneurship, and you have to be vulnerable and you have to take the help where it's at and, you know, be opportunistic and taking advantages of programs like this.
No doubt. Yeah, for sure.
Switching gears a little bit. So in recent news, we're recording this in February. Uh-huh. You know, you mentioned the ITA acquisition earlier on several months ago, and then Catapult is now part of 1871, which is, yeah, now I've spent some time at Catapult too. Could you speak to that and, you know, what that does for your membership and maybe future state of 1871?
Illinois Technology Association, phenomenal organization with 20 plus year history. Really focusing on the Series B to IPO range of Chicago's tech market. We were, 1871 was incubation, really early stage in corporate, and we didn't have anything in the middle. Mm. ITA had the whole middle. And the board chair and the CEO of the ITA came to see me and my board chair in October of 2019, October 22nd. The date becomes important in just a second. And said, hey, we think that it might make more sense for all of us to be under one roof. And this idea, the language I use for it is the power of and this notion of driving collective acceleration all the way across. And how do you bridge? So when you've got the Series A company coming out of 1871 that's leaving to go have its own physical space and grow, how do you keep them connected to the growth part of the community in Chicago, which is a different thing, right? They don't need the same thing that they needed, you know, 6 months prior. They need now support on professional development to help their teams succeed. They need to be in a network of other CEOs or, sorry, my watch is talking to me, CMOs, chief risk officers, whatever it is, revenue officers, to have that opportunity to connect. So that, you know, like I said, there's different things that you need. So we decided collectively that would be a really good answer for Chicago, that we're consolidating the tech stack, trying to drive more clarity in the market of where you can go to get support. We by no means are trying to say that we're the only place that can do these things and can support, but that made a lot of sense. And we closed that deal in February 18th, 2020. And then of course, you know, things changed. On October 22nd, 2020, so a year, like literally to the date, a year later, the team at Catapult came to see me and my board chair. So exactly the same day. So you can imagine what October 22nd on my calendar, like how many neon colors and everything is in place. Like, stay open, you know.
10/22.
The fortune cookie you might get at the end of a Chinese meal. It's on October 22nd. It's very much stay open to possibility. But that deal was also a similar. Can we do better as part of 1871 versus on our own? And the idea of that one, which we announced last Wednesday, a week ago today, that our intent to acquire, it's not closed yet. We're a couple of days from closing. So we'll just miss the February 18th kind of, you know, similar time frame. We announced it on February 17th. So basically almost exactly the same, right? But is inside of our early stage support from idea to Series A, has a structure that's organized by Explore, which is doing kind of initial customer discovery, understanding, does your idea have legs? Build is MVP, launch is launch to business, and it was Grow. And we're taking Grow out and replacing it with Catapult, because it's the same, that group of founders are at that same stage. And it's a phenomenal group of, Catapult's an amazing organization. They started the same year that 1871 did, 2012. Mm-hmm. They've got a tremendous track record. They're known, as you know, Tim, for this peer-based, peer-accepted model that heavy on support and the convening of the founders. And we're keeping that as the model and just replacing what we did for Grow and calling it Catapult and leveraging all the history and reputation and impact that the Catapult team has had in the past.
I love it. And you're right. Like a lot of the companies in 1871 that I was supporting had two desks or six desks, maybe max or small little office or something like that. There's got to be a almost like you're going to college kind of experience and you're leaving, you know, your roots and your parents and stuff like that. You're kind of going on your own and, you know, you're kind of on your own from there. But like, yeah, it's those types of folks at like the Series A level, Series B level, they're looking for additional support. And I think that's spot on. That's great. And I also viewed ITA in the community for, their events with bigger companies and those types of speakers and things like that in 1871, a little bit for the earlier stage. And I think that's awesome that everything's coming under one roof. I'm sure everyone's excited.
This is, you know, for those that are listening, our goal is not to, you know, roll up Chicago Tech, right? But our goal is where it makes sense in the mission of helping these companies be successful, then we're very open to that as an opportunity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of opportunities, you've been at 1871 3 years. You've been in and around the Chicago business and tech ecosystem prior to that.
Yep.
You've seen the ecosystem grow. I'm proud in a lot of senses, you know, just kind of like joining the scene in early 2016, see what's become and see people that I met 5 years ago, like really, really, really making an impact. It's been awesome. From you have a different lens, I think, than the listeners and I do. What are some maybe opportunities for improvement or maybe gaps that if we wanted to continue on the success track for the next 5 years, what would you say those would be?
Yeah. And if I might just take a minute to throw out a couple of fun facts of things that your listeners may or may not know about Chicago Tech. And then I'll go to the couple of the opportunities of which there are several that are clear. The first is that, and I gave a hint to this early on, but about 30% of all founders in Chicago are female. The national average is 18%. So I think that's quite important when you think about the pipeline of companies that can get developed here. The second is we're the second highest producer of software developers in the country. Nobody knows that. You might know that, Tim, but most people don't know that. We're second only to LA. And so I hear a lot of people talk about, the young talent isn't here. And I hear the young talent say the jobs aren't here. In fact, both of those are categorically untrue. We have a matching problem. So on the talent, and you know, you're sitting at the center of this, Tim, but like we have a matching, we have an awareness problem. We have a matching problem that is a way easier thing to solve, in my opinion, than we don't have the supply or we don't have the demand. So I take that as one that we not 1871, but we can solve. You know, there's a lot of news about the financial ratios of the highest, multiple of invested capital in Chicago. People are going to debate that. The answer is yes, it's true. But the reasons for it are that valuations are lower in Chicago and than they would get on the coast. But when they exit at the same level. And so the investor gets to ride that whole elevator up, which is awesome for the investor, which is why investor returns are always so high in Chicago. It's not as good for the founder. I could go on all day about the strengths of Chicago Tech. I think the two or three opportunities that are the most acute. One is we are the density of Fortune 500 companies in Chicago and in the driving distance across the Midwest is enormous. Yet still most of those companies are getting on airplanes to fly, well, pre-COVID, getting on airplanes to fly to San Francisco to find like what's coming up. What are the new things? Who are the young companies that should be connected to? That's a problem, right? We need more of the investing in understanding, building awareness of the companies that are in your backyard. There are 460 something data analytics, advanced analytics startups in Chicago right now. It's enormous density. We are the logistics capital of the world, right? If you have a supply chain or logistics issue, the companies that are probably most likely to be positioned to help solve that problem are here. So number one is a different way to think about the matching problem. Number two is on capital. I think we've done quite a good job on the early stage side. It's gotten a little bit more risk averse, in my opinion, in COVID, but the money is here. It just may not be getting to the right place at the right time. We don't do as well on growth capital. So Series B, Series C, and go on forward. that people tend to need to go elsewhere to get growth capital. That's a challenge. We need more growth capital in Chicago so that we can spin out several, you know, $20 billion, $30 billion, $50 billion companies. So we've got an opportunity on the capital front. And the third one, I think, is back to what we were talking about earlier about diversity. Yes, there's some things we do really well, but there is the have and have nots. And I don't think there has to be, particularly with the Midwest value system, where people to a person, you know, if one person wins, it rises all the boats, not it doesn't take anyone away from anyone else. So if we have that same mentality, how do we think about that vis-a-vis the 77 neighborhoods in Chicago, and how do we do a better job driving inclusive access to, you know, to all the stuff that Chicago has to offer on the tech side?
Let's talk about the growth capital piece for a little bit, because I think you're right. And as I've studied Silicon Valley and watched documentaries and just talked to venture capital folks, it seems like, you know, there's this investing cycle that happens where it's like they're more risky there, they throw more money around, there's more opportunities for things to get to the next phase. They have huge exits. Those exits create rich people dump that money back in. Rich people are more rich, so like they can write bigger checks.
Yep.
And then on the East Coast, it's almost like a lot of the funds are kind of spun out from like traditional upper mid-market private equity, where they're already tossing around a lot of money and they just want to get access to the space. Mm-hmm. How do we do that here if it's not that? Because those are big asks of all sides, or it's going to take a lot of time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are smarter people than me on this topic, but I think there are a couple of things that I would say. The first is the people should be paying attention to what's happening in Chicago and the Midwest with respect to what companies are being started here. And so where are the West Coast and potentially East Coast firms? Where are their satellite offices in Chicago? So somebody's on the ground actually understanding what's happening here. So I have had conversations with, I don't want to name names of firms at the moment, but there who are thinking about that, right? Who are, that they feel like they've got, and all of them have people that grew up in Chicago or Milwaukee or Ann Arbor who have interest in coming back and spending some time in the Midwest and representing their firms here. So I think that's one part, because then you're bringing the mentality of the West Coast to Chicago, which I think is a good thing, right? Less, in my opinion, less risk averse, willing to place bigger bets without, you mentioned this, some investors, not the biggest early stage investors in Chicago, but some want to see revenue and all kinds of things way ahead of, you know, when a company is likely to have it, right? Just it's mismatched in that regard.
That's right.
The second thing is, as these companies exit, so you have Chris Gladwin at Clever Safe, or Jay Schakowat at Fieldglass, or Matt Maloney at Grubhub, right? How many, I'll call it millionaires, you can pick whatever, or Tasty Trade, right? How many millionaires were minted from inside that employee base as a result of those exits? Because those are the people who then have capital. Now it's angel and it's early stage, so like it's not at the same place as growth, but it's getting more of that money circulating mm-hmm. in and impacting these Chicago founders, or they're taking that money and they're building their own company because they've got a very large safety net to do so. And so you got to hit this, in my opinion, at every stage of the funnel for it to have a massive impact. There are lots of P33 is doing a great job right now, really creating the strategy for us, for Chicago to perform rank wise as from a venture capital perspective at the same equivalent of the size of our city. So if we're the third biggest city in Chicago, why are we 7, 8, 9, 10 ranked in venture, right? Like that's a mismatch. So P33 in partnership with a lot of us and the mayor's office, et cetera, is working to help bridge that. And capital is a massive part of their focus area.
I love it. Yeah, I think, yeah, some of these things are in motion. It takes time. But I think, yeah, we got the right people across the city taking a look at it and understanding the importance and how it impacts not just the current tech folks, but the city at large and some of those underserved communities that can get access to the great things that are going on. So Betsy, I think we'll stop here. Okay. I really appreciate you carving out the time. You have so much stuff going on. If someone's an aspiring founder looking for support, where can they learn more about 1871?
Yeah, 1871.com. And all of our handles are on social media at 1871 Chicago. So yeah, please reach out. My email is betsy@1871.com, B-E-T-S-Y. We are here to be as helpful as possible. And I look forward to continuing conversation.
Thanks again, Betsy. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Thanks, Tim. Bye.
Thanks everybody for listening to my conversation with Betsy at 1871. I always enjoy talking to Betsy. She's just got so many different nuggets, and her lens on the Chicago ecosystem is top notch. So thanks again for listening. I hope you enjoyed that. Hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. We have a awesome roster of future guests coming up that we're currently scheduling and doing recordings for. If you have any interest in introductions for future guests, we're always looking for adding to our roster for future guests. My email is tim@lucasjamestalent.com. Again, tim@lucasjamestalent.com. If you have any referrals there. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.